feet away from anybody else? You know what I mean? You know about that rule, right? Okay. Jaya Radha Madhava Punjabi for you. Right? Can you name the names of those four persons in that painting?
Hanuman, Krishna, and...
That's Hanuman in the front. And who are the other three? He's got a bow. Not Krishna. Krishna has a flute. Who has the bow? Starts with an R.
Ram.
And who's with Ram? That his consort. Is her name is? Starts with an S. Ram and Sita, right?
Yeah.
And then the fourth person in the picture. Who's that? Starts with an L. Sitaram blank and Hanuman. Sitaram L and Hanuman. Who's the L?
Lakshman.
You're just testing me to see if I knew. That was pretty clever. And how about you? Who's back here? Same four, plus two more. Who are those four? And then who's the two more? Who's in the front? Monkey.
Oh, Hanuman.
Okay. And then seated on the throne?
By the chair, and then that's Ram in the chair.
Ram and Sita. And then with the Chamra, who's that? He's always on Ram's right side. Who's that? Same as over here, right? Same as in this painting over here. Who's on his right side?
Oh, Lakshman.
Okay. So that leaves two more. Who are the other two? Starts with a B. He became king when Ram was in exile. Who was that? Bharata, right. Bharata. And then the younger brother, because that's why he's on his knees down there with Hanuman, because he's the younger of the four. His name is? Starts with an S. Ram, Lakshman, Bharata, and? Ram, Lakshman, Bharata, and starts with an S. No, not Sita. The brother. Shatrughna. Shatrughna? Shatrughna. You've heard his name before? You think so? Okay. That's what his name is. Four brothers. The eldest one is Ram, Lakshman, Bharata, and Shatrughna. So we had some discussion this morning, and now we're going to give an answer to at least one of the questions that came from the discussion this morning. And there's a well-known story, and there's more paintings than even there's the often narrated story of Hanuman ripping open his heart and showing Sita and Ram inside. You've seen that painting? Hanuman goes, Ram, and Ram's inside his heart. Not seen that one? Okay. So we heard this question this morning, and one devotee in India, he knows a lot about Ram Lila, and he sent me the text. And this is a little summary of the passage. The particular Ramayana, we'll be speaking this evening some more about different Ramayanas, in addition to Valmiki Ramayana, but one of them is Krittivasi Ramayana. Krittivasi Ramayana describes, just at, like this painting here, just after the, when Ram returned, he was gone for 14 years, returned to Ayodhya, and Bharata was very enthusiastic to have Ram, and everybody was enthusiastic to have Ram coronated as king. So after the coronation, big section, after the coronation, then there was a procedure, gift giving to devotees, to the associates of Ram. And at one point, Sita had a fabulous, ornate, beautiful, precious stones and jewels and shining and very expensive, just beyond the imagination of worldly imagination of anything that's of this world. So she took it off her neck, and she was prepared to she turned to Ram and asked Ram to identify who she should give it to. And by his eyes, he told Sita who to give it to. And she understood because of their intimacy. And so she turned to Hanuman. And Hanuman bowed low. She placed this precious, valuable necklace that glowed and so forth around Hanuman's neck. And then Hanuman proceeded, he took the necklace off and proceeded with his teeth to chew it into pieces and break the pieces apart. And Lakshman laughed and said, "Hanuman, what are you doing? Have you no idea? This is Sita's necklace. It's precious stones and jewels. You're behaving like a monkey." And Hanuman's reply was, "Ram's name was not to be found anywhere inside, and I have no use for anything without Ram's name." And Lakshman laughed and said, "What about your body? There's no name of Ram inside, so why are you bothering to maintain your body?" And Hanuman ripped open his chest and showed, according to this particular Ramayana, not like Sitaram in his chest, but that every particle within his body, every bone, everything was Ram's name everywhere. Actually, what's in between, Lakshman was joking and Ram said, "Why don't you just ask him? Why did he do this? I mean, what about his body?" And then Hanuman, on the order of Ram to do so, he showed what was inside. So that's a reference. And we'll have some more details this evening about other Ramayanas. This evening, my thought was to discuss Valmiki. And because over the past week we were discussing Hanuman, who are the greatest authorities on Ram, Valmiki, and Hanuman? Of course, Shukadeva Goswami as well, because he's the authority of Srimad Bhagavatam. But we'll go there tonight. So now it's Vishvamitra Muni. And not the same, but something similar to Dhruva Maharaj going from mixed to pure devotion. In this case, Vishvamitra Muni went from a king to a renunciate, to a Rajarshi, to a Brahmarshi, to a devotee, to a pure devotee, to a perfected soul. So that's our topic. One of the names by which Vishvamitra Muni was known as a king is Kaushika, because he was in the line of one of Brahma's direct sons named Kusha, thus Kaushika. Kusha had four sons. One of them was the grandfather of Vishvamitra Muni, and his name was Kusha, or Kusha. His father was Kusha. He is Kusha Banda. Kushanabha. Kushanabha. And then his son was Gadi. And Gadi was the celebrated father of Vishwamitra Muni. Vishwamitra Muni had an elder sister, and she was also a celebrated personality for two main reasons. Exceptionally chaste and devoted to her husband, as you know, an exalted quality, character of a great soul. And due to her greatness, one of the sacred rivers in India was named after her, Kaushiki River, flowing down from the Himalaya mountains. So we find out about Vishwamitra Muni from the son of Ahalya. You know who is Ahalya? You heard her name? Ahalya? You've heard of Gautama Rishi? Gautama Rishi? Going twice. Gautama Rishi? Three times. No. You haven't heard his name?
No.
Okay. Great Rishi. And Gautama Rishi's wife's name was Ahalya. And Gautama Rishi and Ahalya had a son, who then later became the chief priest of King Janak. Janak is the father of Sita. Janak is the father of Sita. And therefore her name, one of her names is Janaki, the daughter of Janak. And the chief priest, just like Vashishta, became the chief priest of Dasarath, the father of Ram. So the father of Sita, Janaka, had as his chief priest the son of Gautama Rishi and Ahalya. His name was Shatananda. I thought it would be really nice to spend maybe half of our time together just reading. And what I'm reading from is the one of the, from Krishna Dharma's writing, which is really good. And it's an appendix. It's the first item in at the end of his Ramayana. I'm just going to read because it's very well written. The sage Vishwamitra was once a king who ruled over the earth for many thousands of years. Collecting a great army comprising hundreds of thousands of soldiers on elephants, chariots, horses, and foot, he set out on an expedition to examine his kingdom, which is a big kingdom because he ruled the whole earth. Marching through many cities and states, over mountains and rivers, Vishwamitra came at last to the dwellings of the rishis. There he reached the hermitage of Vishishta, the leader and indeed the best of all the rishis. This most beautiful sight was rich with all kinds of flowers, creepers, and trees, and was graced by the gods Gandharvas, Siddhas, and Charnas. It thronged with multitudes of celestial rishis and sages who shone like fire, and it hummed with the constant recitation of sacred Vedic hymns. Some of the sages there lived on water and air alone. Others had leaves fallen from the trees, while others subsisted on a spare diet of fruits and roots. All of them had mastered their senses and minds, and were engaged in asceticism and meditation. The mighty Vishwamitra looked upon this region as if it was the residence of Brahma himself. Approaching Vashishta and bowing low before him, Vishwamitra greeted him with praises and prayers. Vashishta then said to Vishwamitra, "Welcome is your appearance here, O King. Please be seated comfortably and ask of me anything you desire. The two of them spoke for some time in great delight, partaking of simple forest fare, that means food. Vasishtha saw that Vishvamitra was accompanied by a vast army, and he said to the king, I wish to offer full hospitality to you and all your troops. Please accept my desire without any question, O king. I am not satisfied by simply offering you fruits and water. Vishvamitra was unwilling to take anything from Vasishtha, whom he viewed as his superior. He declined politely, saying, I'm fully honored by your words and audience alone. Indeed, your very sight is sufficient. How could I ask anything more? I am satisfied with the fruits you have offered. With your permission, I shall now depart. Please look upon me with love and let me leave, taking only your blessings. But the sage was intent on offering Vishvamitra further hospitality. Vishvamitra tried again and again to dissuade him, but the pious-minded Vasishtha would not be refused. He continuously requested the king to remain there longer. At last, seeing that this would be most pleasing to the sage, Vishvamitra relented and agreed. Vasishtha felt joy, and he stood up and called for his celestial cow, Sabala. Come, come, my beloved Sabala, he said. I wish to entertain this king, Vishvamitra, and all his army with a sumptuous feast. Please make every preparation. Vasishtha's wonderful cow began to produce from her body all kinds of food and drink in enormous quantities, steaming rice heaped high as hills, cooked vegetables of every variety, soups, breads, cakes, pies, pastry, sweetmeats, butter, cream, and yogurt, all in silver dishes and plates, filled to the brim. Pretty fancy cow, huh? Streams of delicious juices flowed, and pots filled with ambrosia milk drinks appeared there. Vishvamitra and his entire army were fully satisfied by that splendid array of foodstuffs, every morsel of which tasted like nectar. The king was astounded to see that it had all been produced from a cow. And he went before Vasishtha, saying, Your cow is highly amazing, O magnanimous one. I wish to ask from you that she be given to me. In exchange for 100,000 other cows. As king, I should always be offered the best of everything, and I see this cow to be the very best of her species. Therefore, kindly, give her to me, O sage. But, Vasishtha replied, I shall never part with Sabala, even in exchange for 1,000,000,000 cows. Not even for heaps of gold and silver, Sabala is inseparable from me, even as glory is inseparable from a man practicing asceticism. Vasishtha had no interest in worldly wealth. His life was dedicated to the practice of sacrifice and austerity. All his happiness was derived from within himself. Even if Vishvamitra had offered him the entire world, the sage would not have been interested. Sabala was very dear to him. She had long served the Rishi. Assisted by her, Vasishtha was able to perform many sacrifices for the good of the world. This was his sacred duty, and had no intention of renouncing it. He continued, My very life depends upon this cow for a long time. She has sustained me with her milk. Every day she provides me with all the requisites for my sacrificial performance, and she has become as dear to me as my own self, and I shall not part with her under any circumstances. Conflict. Vishvamitra was not used to being refused anything. He was incensed by the sage's insistence on keeping the cow. He did not want to be denied and spoke angrily with Vasishtha. How is it that you are refusing to give this cow to your king? I am a warrior by nature and therefore see strength as the means of achieving my ends. If you will not give me this wonderful creature, then I shall remove her by force. The king was overwhelmed by pride and anger. Taking hold of Sabala with his exceptionally powerful arms, he began to drag her away, surrounded by his soldiers. Vasishtha looked sorrowfully upon the scene and said to Vishwamitra, "As the king, it is appropriate for you to use such force to achieve your purpose. As a Brahmin, it also behooves me to exercise forgiveness, for that is my sacred duty in all circumstances. Nor can I ever use force, for gentleness is always prescribed for the Brahmanas. Therefore, O king, I forgive you." Although deeply pained to see his cow being dragged away, Vasishtha controlled his feelings. By his own power, he was able to prevent her from being taken, but he stood by silently, without doing anything. Sabala cried out in distress as the king seized her, and she spoke to Vasishtha, "Are you now abandoning me, O Lord? What wrong have I done that I am now being removed in this wretched condition by wretched men, even as my master, the all-powerful Vasishtha, looks on?" Sabala broke loose from the king. She ran to Vasishtha with tears in her eyes and all her exquisitely formed limbs trembling. Looking up at Vasishtha, she implored, "Am I now to be forsaken by you, O almighty son of Brahma?" Vasishtha, his heart tormented with grief, replied to Sabala, "I am not abandoning you, nor have you ever wronged me, O Sabala. Intoxicated with power and depending upon his huge army, this great king, the ruler of the earth, is taking you away. What then can I do, being only a poor Brahmin?" Sabala divined, that means she understood, his deeper meaning, and answered, "The wise have declared that a Brahmin's strength is always superior to that of a warrior. The strength of the sages is spiritual, while that of the warrior exists in their arms only. Therefore, simply order me to stay, and this arrogant king will not succeed in taking me away." Vasishtha at once cried out to Sabala, "Stay!" Immediately, the wish-fulfilling cow brought forth from her body a vast army of fierce fighters equipped with weapons of every kind, who fell upon the army of the king with terrible cries. Pretty exciting. Boys like battle scenes, right? I'll ask at the end, what was the best part? The battle scene, that was the best part. Seeing his own army routed by the fighters created by Sabala, Vishwamitra stood his ground and released various kinds of weapons to beat them back. Wave after wave of ferocious-looking warriors issued forth from Sabala, some rising up from her roar, some coming out of her udders, while others appeared from her anus. They rushed at the army of the king, and in short time, Vishwamitra saw his forces completely defeated and dispersed by the warriors of mystic creation. Vishwamitra had been accompanied by his 100 sons. They became furious with Vasishtha and surrounded him. They shot powerful weapons at the sage with speed toward him like blazing comets. Vasishtha, not roused to anger, uttered a powerful Vedic mantra to check the weapons simply by the power of Vasishtha's utterance, the princes were instantly reduced to ashes. Only one was left standing. Vishvamitra looked on in complete astonishment. He stood alone, filled with fear and shame, resembling the furious ocean after it has become becalmed. He became lusterless like an eclipsed sun. He had lost his sons and his army, and he felt miserable, his strength and spirit shattered. Ordering his remaining son to take on the earth's administration, he resolved to retire to the forest to practice asceticism in order to increase his power. After a long period of ascetic practice aimed at pleasing Shiva, the extremely powerful and beneficent God finally appeared and said, "Why are you engaging in such austerities, O King? What do you wish to achieve? I am capable of bestowing boons, therefore ask for me whatever you may desire." At that time, Vishvamitra had only the knowledge of lesser celestial weapons, and he did not know how to use the missiles presided over by the principal gods. He fell prostrate before Shiva and offered many prayers, saying, "If you are pleased with me, O Lord, then please bestow upon me the knowledge of every divine weapon presided over by the gods, including the weapons of yourself and Brahma. Tell me the complete science of archery and warfare with all its innermost secrets." Shiva immediately spoke, "So be it," and disappeared. And by his mystic power, he conferred upon Vishvamitra the knowledge of warfare, along with all mystic weapons. After receiving the weapons, Vishvamitra, who was already full of pride, became even more arrogant. Swelling with power like the ocean on the full moon, he took Vasishtha, the most eminent of all seers, to be dead there and then. He went at once to the hermitage and began to discharge all his weapons in Vasishtha's direction. The beautiful grove was consumed by the fire of the missiles, and the sages rushed about in all directions, tormented and alarmed by the attack. Vasishtha saw the sages as well as the beasts and birds fleeing by the thousands afflicted by Vishvamitra's weapons. He called out, "Do not fear. I shall now put an end to Vishvamitra's display of might, even as the sun dispels the morning mist." Vasishtha was enraged. He went before Vishvamitra shouting, "Here I am, O wicked fellow. Show me then the limits of your strength." Vishvamitra aimed at Vasishtha the missile presided over by the fire god, and it went toward him glowing like the sun. Smiling, even as the weapon raced toward him, Vasishtha called out to Vishvamitra, "What use is your martial power, O unworthy disgrace of your race? See today the power of the Brahmins." Vasishtha was standing only with his staff. He held his staff up, and the fire weapon was immediately absorbed in it. Vishvamitra then let go of each of the divine weapons, one after another, including those presided over by Vayu, Varuna, Indra, Yamaraj, Brahma, the immortal Shiva, Dharma, the god of virtue. All of them were drawn into Vasishtha's staff and entirely neutralized. As he stood there, blazing in his own glory, Vasishtha looked like a smokeless fire of universal destruction. Imbued with the force of the divine weapons, he shot forth tongues of flame from all his pores. Hosts of gods and celestial rishis assembled in the canopy of the sky above, being fearful, spoke to Vashishta. Today you have humbled the mighty Vishramitra. Your prowess is infallible, O noble soul. Please extinguish the fire blazing from your body and save the world. When he heard the heavenly voices, Vashishta regained his calm and stood silently with his mind controlled. Freed from anger, he told Vishramitra, "You may leave here in peace. Do not act again in such a foolish way." Vishramitra, dejected, heaved a deep sigh. He considered his strength useless and said, "Weak indeed are my weapons when used against a Brahmin. Where is my pride now? The might of a warrior's arms is nothing in comparison to medical powers. I shall therefore return to the forest and perform severe penance until I attain the status of a Brahmin." Vishramitra went again to the forest, having made enemies with a highly exalted soul. Meanwhile, Vashishta recreated his hermitage by mystic powers and began again the performance of his religious duties meant only for the benefit of mankind. Vishramitra, with his principal queen, departed for the southern region to undertake severe austerities. After 1,000 years had passed, the Lord Brahma, pleased with his austerities, recognized him as a Rajarshi. Now this is not our present yuga, this is Treta Yuga. The duration was long like this. 1,000 years is a long time. And the full duration of life was 1,000 years, 10,000 years. So it's the equivalent of going to the forest and doing austerities for 10 years. But different yuga. However, Vishramitra felt dejected after so many years of austerities. He can only be a Rajarshi. He resolved to perform more austerities. Vishramitra, once for a very long period of time, he stood up on one leg with his arms upraised, Chandakaranikashipu, right? Another 1,000 years passed as Vishramitra practiced his asceticism. Vyodhya Shanku. Tree Shanku. Tree Shanku. In the Ikshvaku dynasty. And he, at that time, was ruling Ayodhya. He had this desire. He desired to attain the heavens in his very same body. And he asked Vashishta to perform a sacrifice for that purpose. Vashishta replied with the same request. The sons of Vashishta rejected his proposal as well and cursed him to become a child. Keeping it simple, it's a Vashishta. So let me go to Vishramitra and ask him. And it was also known that Vishramitra had great powers because he was capable of enormous austerities. Long practicing of austerities, so he had lots of power. So he made that plan. Vishramitra, taking pity on Trishanku, and also happy to get an opportunity to prove his power against something with which Vashishta had rejected, agreed to do a sacrifice to elevate Trishanku to heavenly realm. So then he sent messages out to other sages, "Please come and join me." They were afraid to say no. So everyone went. They said no, while Vishwamitra, Vishishta's 100 sons, yeah, that's right. Everyone else said yes, except Vishwamitra's sons and one other sage named Mahodaya. So then Vishwamitra became angry, enraged, and he cursed the 100 sons of Vishishta and Mahodaya that they would become hunters and dog eaters for many lifetimes. And also not attending with the demigods, because during this previous age, the demigods frequented Earth. The heavenly region is vertically above, but they would, because there were many pious people, they would come and spend time. But Vishwamitra Muni's sacrifice, they didn't. But that didn't stop Vishwamitra Muni. He began a sacrifice, carefully following the procedures laid down in the Vedas. He sat before a blazing fire and uttered prayers to all the gods, headed by Vishnu, pouring offerings of ghee into the flames. At the proper moment, he said, "Witness now my ascetic powers. By my command, this king, Trishanku, shall rise to heaven, even in this body of flesh and bones. Oh, Trishanku, by virtue of the merits of my austerities, ascend now to heaven, where you shall attain the state of the gods." And then, voila, he started rising in the air. He's here through religion and piety. Indeed, your own preceptor, Vishishta, had refused your illegal desire for heaven. O foolish men, fall headlong back to earth. So he starts to fall headlong back to earth. Called out to Vishwamitra, "Save me! Save me!" So what did Vishwamitra do? "Stop!" Immediately the king's downward progress was halted and remained situated in the sky, upside down. Seated amid many rishis, the great sage Vishwamitra became overwhelmed with anger at seeing Indra's refusal to allow Trishanku to enter heaven. He said, "Since this jealous god will not let the king attain the heavenly regions, I shall now create a second heaven. By dint of my mystic powers, Trishanku shall then live there in peace. Like another Lord Brahma, Vishwamitra evolved from his mind a galaxy of consisting of 27 lunar mansions which appeared in the sky." Lunar mansions. Those are like the days of the month. There's the zodiac, that's the principal constellations, 12 for each of the months. And then the nakshatras, or the smaller constellations, there's 27 of them through which the moon passes each month for the phases of the moon. So he created a second set. Observing this disturbance to the universal situation, Indra and the gods became alarmed and approached Vishwamitra, saying, "This king doesn't deserve a place in heaven, O blessed sage. Rejected by his own guru, he now stands divested of all his pious merits." Vishwamitra replied, "I have pledged my word to this king. How shall I make it false? A promise of heaven has been given by me. Therefore, please let this king enjoy heavenly bliss and let the lunar mansions I created remain in existence." So they struck a deal. Indra, out of respect for the great Vishwamitra's request, replied, "It shall be so. Your planets will endure in the heavens in the southern quarter beyond the celestial sphere. Trishanku shall remain in their midst as happy as a god and shining brilliantly. All those stars shall circumambulate him, even as all the planets circle the pole star. May you be blessed." Vishwamitra became pleased. But after ending the sacrifice, he considered, "Oh no. Driven by my anger toward Vishishta, I have now placed the impious Trishanku in the heavens. Here in the southern quarter, he will certainly exert a malefic influence upon this region. I shall now therefore move to some other place." Also, Vishwamitra realized he had considerably diminished his ascetic merits, expending them on the task of raising Trishanku to heaven. Then there's a few more. It was mentioned already that he had a sister. His sister's name was Satyavati. And Satyavati had married Richika Muni. And Richika Muni and his sister, Satyavati, had some sons. And one of those was Jamadagni. And Jamadagni is the father of, starts with a P. What? He has a chopper in his hand. He starts with a P. Parshuram. Parshuram's father was Jamadagni. Jamadagni's father was Richika, and his mother was Satyavati. And Satyavati was the elder sister of Vishwamitra. So Satyavati's son had a problem, and he came to the rescue for Satyavati's son. His name was Shuna Shepa. So Vishwamitra moved to a new place from south. He went to Pushkar. That's in the Rajasthan area. And he continued his austerities. And this time, another ruler of Ayodhya, Ambarish, well, he was also in the Ikshvaku line. Ambarish? You've heard his name, right? Okay. So he was the king at the time. Excuse me. This is a different Ambarish than the one we know in the Bhagavatam, the son of Nabhaga. So it's a different Ambarish. Was performing Ashwamedha Yajnas. Indra did it again. He stole one of the horses for the Ashwamedha Yajna. So the king was told by the sacrificial priest, either find the stolen horse or make a human sacrifice. So because we have to complete the sacrifice once it started. So the king, searching for the horse, came to the ashram of Richika and Vishwamitra's sister, Kaushiki, or Satyavati. And the king, this is Ambarish, the king, not the same fifth, ninth canto Ambarish, requested one of their sons for a sacrifice. And the middle son, Shuna Shepa, he volunteered, which was very surprising, but he volunteered to be a human sacrifice. Seeing that the parents were attached to the elder and the younger sons, and he wasn't so, they weren't so attached to him. But he thought second about it. Well, it's not such a good idea. So he ran away from the king. And that middle son of his sister, elder sister, went and took shelter of Vishwamitra's ashram. And Vishwamitra felt compassion to his nephew. And so Vishwamitra requested one of his sons to replace his sister's son in the sacrifice. None of the sons volunteered. And Vishwamitra lost it. He became angry and he cursed them to become dog eaters. Vishwamitra then initiated the boy, Shuna Shepa, with two mantras, which is, were to be chanted during, at the time of the sacrificial ceremony. And by chanting of the hymns, glorifying Indra and Indra's brother Vamana, the personality of Godhead, he would be saved from death. And the king's sacrifice was also completed successfully without a human sacrifice. It's a happy ending. Later that same Shuna Shepa, his sister's son, or his nephew, later became a perfectly self-realized soul and became a guide to other misguided souls in this world. Vishwamitra had nothing to gain from helping Shuna Shepa, yet he gave him the life-saving mantras to take shelter of in higher powers. Shuna Shepa realized that if taking refuge in God helped him in his calamitous situation, how much more benefit would he find if he were to do it on a regular basis? So now he's depleted his austerities once again. So back he goes to performing more austerities, gradually building his stock of pious credits and increasing his power. It's a long story, isn't it?
Yeah.
He lived a long time. Indra started getting nervous. Uh-oh. He may become so powerful, he may want to take over my kingdom. I better do something. So what did he do? He sent a celestial maiden. And her name starts with an M. Vishwamitra and? Menaka. Menaka entered a lake near to the sage and began to bathe. Hearing the tinkling of her ankle bells, his meditation broke. And then he saw her form, which had clothing that was wet and clinging to her body, and he went, whoa, whoa, whoa. Let's get together. Who are you? And you must be a heavenly apsara who is not bound by worldly morality, so let's get together. There'll be no sin in our getting together this way. So she was under a service request of Indra, so she made her residence with the sage, Vishwamitra, and they spent some time together. One version of Ramayan says 10 years, another version says 100 years, but in either case it passed as if it was a day, and then a little light went on in Vishwamitra's head, and he said, I've been distracted due to my lust, and then further covered by ignorance. And Menaka was a little afraid because Vishwamitra was known to be, you know, a tough guy. But he didn't curse her, didn't say anything bad because he realized he was part of the problem. And she succumbed to the intention of Indra, but you know, so did he. And so he didn't say anything heavy to her. He just offered his blessings to return to her kingdom. And then he took this resolve that for the rest of my life I'm going to remain a celibate. And then he shifted to another place, because it was in Pushkar. So he, the river that was named after his sister, the Kaushiki River. And it happens again. Like he keeps losing his doing and then losing and doing and losing. And the sage practiced the most rigid austerities, eating only air and standing with his arms raised above his head. Sound familiar? Who else did that one? Hiranyakashipu, right? Yeah. During the hot season, he exposed himself to the sun while sitting between four blazing fires on all sides. In the rainy season, he lived under the open sky without any shelter. The cold season, he stood in water for days and nights, 1,000 years. Pretty extreme. He began to emit a blazing fire from his body, born from the power of his asceticism. Andrew goes, better do something. So he selected another apsara this time. Her name is Rambha, R-A-M-B-H-A. And he sent her go distract Vishwamitra. This time Vishwamitra didn't get distracted. Instead, he became angry with her because of your efforts to disrupt my penance. I curse you to become a stone for 1,000 years, and then you can return to the heavenly planets. And to pay that curse, he depleted all his pious merits again. He's got to start all over again. So he's deciding, I better not get angry anymore. So he went to the Himalaya region, suspended even his breathing, as well as taking neither food nor water. And the heavenly denizens became very disturbed and please go to him and give him what he wants. He went not just to become a Rajarshi, but a Brahmarshi. So Brahma came, but he didn't give him a Rajarshi Brahmarshi, he gave him a Maharshi. Maharishi. Poor Vishwamitra. He requested Brahma to give me this Brahmarshi title. Brahma said, keep doing your austerities. Very determined. For another 1,000 years, then the gods said, go, the whole universe is trembling. Give him what he wants. So now Brahma appeared, said, you've conquered your senses. You're standing erect like a wooden post. Your austerities are starting to burn the whole universe. So you have attained your desire. You now stand equal to Vishishta as a Brahmarshi. All Vedic knowledge will become manifest in your pure heart. Please stop your austerities. Requested in that way, Vishishta also came and not only forgave Vishwamitra, but befriended Vishwamitra, saying, you have surpassed all with your tremendous asceticism and have become a worthy Brahmin. No anger towards you exists in my heart. Be blessed, O great Rishi. Whew. Finally, lots of thousands of years, he's now past the goal line. Vishwamitra fell at the feet of Vishishta, begging forgiveness for his previous wrongdoings that was already granted. And Vishwamitra left the place wandering the planet that now is at Brahmarshi. So that's part one. And then there's three more parts, which is going to be much quicker because I'm not going to be just summarizing. We heard that Vasishtha, while he was doing one of those austerity periods, Vasishtha was invited to be the chief priest in Ayodhya. Then Vishvamitra, after wandering, finally set up an ashram in the Dandak forest, and he was having a problem with Tataka and Subahu, so he decided to go to Dasarath's kingdom and request of Dasarath for his son Ram to come and destroy Tataka. And then that's a celebrated section of Ramayana. Dasarath wanted to know who's Tataka, what's your strength, and so on. And hearing the whole thing, it's not possible. Hearing about them, even I would have a challenge. Let me go. My son is just a lad. The language of Valmiki Ramayana says she's not even 16. And it turns out later, Sita explains when she meets Ravana at Panchavati that when Ram was married, he was 12 and she was 6. How old are you?
12.
How old are you?
6.
Well, things were different then, by the way. Don't worry about it. Quite okay. So my son is just a lad, and you know, so he was, when Prabhupada very much liked saying this again and again, when Vishvamitra came and Dasarath received, because he's a great sage, and here's a king receiving a great sage, so he asked the sage, how are you doing in your progress of spiritual perfection? That's how Prabhupada would say. That's how exalted souls inquire from one another. Not like, how are you doing with coronavirus? I mean, you may ask those questions too, but you know, the real interest is your path of spiritual progress. So, and then he said, you know, whatever your reason for coming, the answer is yes. Here's a blank check, fill in the amount, whatever you want. And Vishvamitra said, this is fitting, someone from the Ikshvaku dynasty, here's what I want, give me your son, I want to have him go kill Tataka. Who's Tataka? No. He didn't say no, he just said, please change your mind. And Vishvamitra said, he didn't like get into this tussle with him, he just said, let me know what your final word is, and I'm on my way. And may you live long. Like, you're going to get it if you... So, at that point, Vishishta stepped in and said, Dasarath, don't go against your word. Ikshvaku dynasty doesn't do that. Please understand that Vishvamitra is so powerful, your son will be protected because he's with Vishvamitra. Vishvamitra has the power to create a second heaven. He can do anything. Please understand, he's coming here for the benefit of your son. He'll give your son celestial weapons. He'll be well protected by Vishvamitra. I advise you to say yes. So the little light went on and he said yes. So off they went. And there's this nice description. So now it's Vishvamitra and the two boys. It's not just Ram, but Lakshman went too. Over this shoulder was their bow, over this shoulder was their arrow, in their hand were swords. The description of Valmiki was like two three-headed cobras moving behind, and Vishvamitra purposefully, he's capable of great austerities, he just has these 12-year-old boys behind him. So he was marching fast, seeing, you know, what's their stamina. And they kept up with him. And he was very pleased. And no words exchanged, but he just like charging off, brisk walk, as they call it today. And they traveled the whole day. And he was very pleased by their determination, their strength, their capacity for austerities, and they took rest at night, and Vishwamitra was up before they were up. Then there's a very celebrated section where he's now doing some service for Ram. The external looked like they're doing some service for him, but he's getting their association, and truly he wants to benedict them. That's his mood. And then when he goes to wake them up in the morning, he spontaneously recites a verse in Sanskrit found in Valmiki Ramayana, which, according to what I've understood to this day, that very same verse composed by Valmiki is the verse that's used to wake up the deities in the temples by Sri Vaishnavas. The Sanskrit's not here, but here's the translation. It's a devotion-filled prayer. How fortunate is Kaushalya, who has begotten you as her son. In the morning, the sun has risen. I'll read it again. So it's a mantra that the Vaishnavas chant when waking the deities, along with many others, I'm sure. How fortunate is Kaushalya, who has begotten you as her son. The morning sun has risen in the east. Now, you, my dear Lord, tiger among men, please arise and perform those duties that are considered divine. So they wake up, and again and again and again, the different stops in the direction of the Siddha Ashram. Siddha Ashram is a place where many, many histories are narrated, the descent of the Ganges and the history of the Sarayu River, and the place where Indra went to undergo austerities after he had killed the Chitraketu, became what was the sixth canto?
Tvashta. The Brahmana Tvashta.
Yeah, that's his father. Created through mantra, created an enemy of Indra.
Vritrasura,
yes. So after killing Vritrasura, thank you, Indra went there to undergo austerities, according to Valmiki Ramayana and Vishwamitra's narration. So many, many, many different histories. He then also, they get to the place where his ashram is, which is where Tataka, Subahu, and Maricha hang out and defile their sacrifices. So he gives that long history, and it's a long history of how they became what they became. And then there's this concern that Ram, how can I kill a woman? And so he knows that Ram is a follower of Dharma, you don't kill women. So Vishwamitra gives some reasons. Although she's born in the body of a woman, she's not conducting herself in a proper way. She's, and there's historical references where different holy people have killed women because they're violators of Dharma. So don't worry, there's no sin incurred. And finally Ram says, my father said to do whatever you say, and you're saying, so I'll do. Then there's this other discussion. So there's this encounter, that sacrifice. Vishwamitra gives to them celestial weapons. Oh, there's an important one. The very first evening, before they rest, the Bala and Ati Bala mantras, that they can't be disturbed when they're asleep, and they'll never become fatigued and hungry and stuff when they're doing what they're doing in the activities like this for the rest. So he gave him all celestial weapons, because he had all these celestial weapons given to him by Lord Shiva and others before that. So they're like ready to go to take care of Ravana and all the other. Of course, he's the personality god, he doesn't need anybody's weapons, but in the story that happens. And then they meet Tataka. So there is this classic question. Maybe you've thought of it before. But in Krishna's Leela, the first demon he kills is a woman. In Ram's Leela, the first demon he kills is a woman. Why is that? Is there a significance to that? So we discussed it. And I did a lot of research and I couldn't find anything, but there's one devotee scholar who lives in Maharashtra somewhere, ISKCON devotee scholar, and he's making a translation of commentary by a contemporary of Rupa Goswami, or the six Goswamis, named Hari Shuri, and who is a devotee of Lord Chaitanya. So his teachings and his translations are, you know, very, 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 very much in line with our Gaudiya line. So in his commentary, he addresses this question, at least it's a commentary in the 10th canto, when it comes to Putana, then similarly with Ram, his explanation is this. When Krishna, very similar to what Bhaktivinoda Thakur said about the killing of demons in Braja, by Krishna's killing of demons, like we were discussing Ram's killing of demons, Krishna is removing obstacles. So what's the first obstacle that appears in one's path? Of course, Bhaktivinoda says false guru, false teachings and false teachers, falsity. And this Hari Shuri says, asha, the taste for the impermanent, hankering for enjoying temporary objects through sense gratification. And that's like very deep in the heart. That's, you know, what brings us to the material world, according to Bhagavad Gita. Raga, dvesha. Samutena, raga, or asha. And by gender, asha is feminine. So that's the significance, according to Hari Shuri. The first demon is this tendency to be an enjoyer of objects of the senses. That's the significance. So, battle, Tataka slain, Subahu slain, Maricha gets tossed several hundred miles in the air by one arrow and lands, and then the story of Maricha comes up later. So when that's done, it's like, okay, mission accomplished, ready to go back to Ayodhya. But he has another idea. Vishvamitra has another mission. He's kind of, you know, omniscient. And he knows now more about Ram than he did before. And Ram is meant to marry Sita. So he doesn't say, let's go marry Sita. He says, Janaka's having a big festival and let's go to Janaka's kingdom. And we can see the bow of Lord Shiva, Shaiva Chapa. So off they go. And on the way, they cross the Ganges and the descent of the Ganges. Like, you know, the Bhagavatam has a whole chapter, 5th canto, descent of the Ganges. Ramayana has a whole section, descent of the Ganges. They're not identical, but they're very similar. They go to the sage of Gotama. Remember the name Gotama? We spoke about Gotama earlier, great sage, Gotama Rishi. But, you know, the place is empty. And Ram says, how come the place is so beautiful but it's empty? And Vishvamitra said, what happened is Ahalya got distracted by Indra, and she knew very well it was Indra, but she yielded to Indra, who came in disguise, as if she was her husband, Gotama. And when Gotama came back and knew what his wife had done, Indra faced the wrath of Gotama. That's where Indra got so many eyes all over his body, curse of Gotama. And Ahalya was cursed to, and there's different versions of Ramayana, become a stone or enter into a stone or something, and you'll be delivered when Ram comes. So Ram is told by Vishvamitra, Muni, just see that stone over there, put your foot on the stone, and he steps on the stone, and Haliya comes out. Offers her prayers, Gautama comes back, and they lived happily ever after. But, you know, he delivered Ahalya. He gets to King Janaka's kingdom, and several things. There's this narration that we have been hearing from Satananda, the son of Ahalya and Gautama. He gives all this history. There's all nice festivities and social exchanges. The bow is brought out. Ram not only picks up the bow and strings the bow, but he breaks the bow. Sita's marriage is now consummated, and she has a sister. What's his sister? Sita's sister's name?
Urmila.
Urmila is wedded to whom? The names of those two other brothers, Ram, Lakshman, Bharata, and Shatrughna. Very good. Bharata. And the fourth one starts with an S. Shatrughna. So a suggestion is made, hey, King Janak, you have a relative over there, and he's got two daughters too, and what do you think? And he thinks, well, it sounds great. So they have a little, you know, matching sick talk, and the marriage maker idea comes up, and let's go send a message to Dasharath, and Dasharath says, let's go. And so there's the marriage of all four brothers and the two sisters and the two, whatever they are, nephews, cousin sisters. And it's a big event, Ram's marriage. And by this time, Vishvamitra is not just like a king or want to get back at Vashishta or wanted to become a Rajarshi, Maharshi, Brahmarshi. He's become a Bhakta. He's now become a Shudabhakta. It took a long time because he was kind of stuck in get back and all that stuff. He get his material thing. But by Ram's association, he's now come to the stage of perfection. Commentary says there's no further mention of Vashishta asks permission from everybody. I'd like to go back to the mountains and do my austerities, and we don't hear anything more about Vashishta's life. So don't ask me what happens after that, because there's no information. But the trajectory is now he's a perfected devotee. So if he's perfected, why doesn't he just stay with Ram? Because there's Ram. But he wants to do his meditation and austerities. Something like Kardama, after having Lord Kapila as his son, wants to go back to the forest and do his austerities. Kind of like counterintuitive. They meditate on your son. But there he is. In any case, that's what he wanted to do. And the commentary speaks about how he transitioned from where he was and step by step by step. And it's already 2:00. So, by the end of Balakanda, Vishvamitra had traversed the full trajectory in bhakti. No longer in the dawn of devotion or in the noon of blazing rage of overbearing arrow, ego, Vishvamitra had settled in the hearts and minds of all as one of the most luminous sages of his time, a perfect devotee. So now here's the last little reference. In Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adi Lila, chapter 15, what's written, this is the marriage of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu or Nimai Pandit with Lakshmi Devi. And the matchmaker was known by Vanamali, Gataka, a resident of Navadvipa, and Brahmin by caste. He was formerly Vishvamitra, who negotiated the marriage of Lord Ramachandra later. He was the Brahmin who negotiated the marriage of Krishna with Rukmini. That same Brahmin acted as the marriage maker of the Lord in Chaitanya Lila. That's Prabhupada's purport. So, Vishwamitramuni. A lot of history.
It was very interesting, probably.
Well, this reading is so nice, just to then to summarize. I'd like to use your bathroom. Which way is the nearest? Right down here?
Krishna Guru Maharaj. Online question.
Okay.
Will the soul of Trishanku ever get liberation?
No. He's still hanging upside down. I asked that question. He's still there.
And the Trishanku heaven is also there.
Yes. I don't know the detail, but it's part of Vedic astronomy. I don't know the detail, but that's the explanation that was given to me.
And then, next question is, this is my question. I know that you also mentioned, Maharaj, that when...
Because it specifically said, Vishwamitra wanted this benediction, and it was granted, that he will this remain for the duration of the universe. Just like the other constellations, the nakshatras and the zodiac, and that was given. Okay, go ahead.
So, Vishwamitra's story was told in front of the whole audience in Janaka's kingdom.
Yes.
In the court.
That's my understanding.
Yes, that's...
I don't know exactly who was in the audience, but at least Janaka and, you know, some number of people were there.
No, I was thinking, I was reading that when I was reading the Ramayana, I was thinking, if I were Vishwamitra Muni, I'll feel so ashamed, you know, hearing...
His glory sung. But Ram heard his glory sung.
Yeah, actually, some of them are not glories, right? That is why I was asking.
Well, you know, but he went from, you know, from bad to good. By the mercy of the Lord. That's okay.
It's an off-topic question.
Okay. Let's save it for last, huh?
Yes.
Let's stay on-topic question. Do you have something?
I had
one question. Why don't you take the microphone?
Thank you for the class, Maharaj.
You're on.
Yeah. Okay. So I was just, when you mentioned the parallels in terms of like how Vishwamitra and... Hiranyakashipu did the austerities.
Yeah.
With, you know, both of them with their hands up in the air and
yeah.
One leg, and also fire coming, all the demigods were afraid of, you know, in both cases they
yes.
were afraid. And both were envious also. One was envious of Vishnu of Krishna, and one was envious of Vasishtha, in terms of like,
yes,
you know what he wanted. And one is glorified in terms of like, you know, Hiranyakashipu versus Vishwamitra. One is glorified because he's a devotee, and you know he's in the end like having he's his guru of Sri Ram, and but at the same time, Hiranyakashipu, because of the atrocities he did, you know, to his son and you know other atrocities, he's not. So I was just trying to understand more in terms of like just comparing the two in that situation. There's not a lot of difference between.
Oh, there is. There's similarities,
yeah.
And there's fundamental difference. And one of the fundamental differences is Sura and Asura. God and no God. Vishwamitra was never in that place. It's a world of difference. And here's another. As soon as Vishwamitra had a wholesome association, he accepted it. Hiranyakashipu had a pure devotee as a son and he wanted to kill him. He never accepted it, you know, etc. With the son on his lap and the whole thing. Patting his head, and, you know. Asura. Through and through. And no holy association transformed him at all. Major difference. Some of the behavior is similar. You know, the approach to get what they want, for example. Okay. Yeah.
What happened to the cow?
Vishishta and the cow were together for a long time, according to what we heard. And so we have, there's no reason to believe that there was separation. As long as Vishishta was around, the cow was around with Vishishta. Wherever Vishishta was, the cow was. That's what happened to the cow. They were inseparable. It's not like, we don't hear the detail. I'm unaware of any detail that says when Vishishta went to Ayodhya, he stopped his sacrifices. He stopped doing his brahminical thing. We don't hear that. So if he was continuing his brahminical thing and he was previously, everything for his brahminical thing was provided by the cow, that's not likely to have changed. He wouldn't have trained, you know, even if there could be some other way he wouldn't exchange. It's the relationship. We're not hearing the microphone.
Hello?
Yeah.
Krishna Guru Maharaj. Guru Maharaj, like how Vishwamitra got association of Rama?
How he got?
Got association of Rama.
How did he get? He went to Ayodhya. That's how he got.
Okay. So
what he knew about Ram is not disclosed. Maybe he just knew because of his mystic perfection and he knew who Ram was. Doesn't say how he knew who Ram was, but how he got his association was he went to Ayodhya.
Thanks very much. I have one more question.
Okay.
Gautam Rishi is it the same Gautam Rishi which was in Mahabharata where all the Pandavas got trained?
Well, yeah, probably, but the way to be sure is in the first canto of Bhagavatam, Prabhupada would give like a biographical sketch of personalities.
Hmm.
So go there and look what does Prabhupada say about Gautama Rishi.
Sure.
Now, there are many cases where Rishis spanned yugas.
Yeah,
yeah? So
sure.
Just check there.
Sure.
one more question came on topic.
Okay.
Why was Vishwamitra so worried about the title of Brahma Rishi, even after he has given up the quality, unwanted qualities of Krodha, and after that Kama? I believe being situated with these qualities is more meaningful than the Brahma Rishi title.
Well, it's pride. Because who needs a title? He's got the quality. Who needs a title? Just have the qualification. But he, you know, it was pride. He wanted the title. You know, it had to do with getting equal footing with his rival. That's material. It was granted. And then there was acceptance. Because Vasishtha didn't have that attitude anyway. He didn't see him as a rival. But that's what was coming from his side. Rivalry and competition and material. And that's a disqualification. Maybe that's why it took so long.
This off topic.
Yes.
But from Ramayana. Why mantra? Kaikeyi's maid servant, mantra.
Mm-hmm.
Why did she, whenever I ask the question, like why she did whatever she did, changing the mind of Kaikeyi, then I hear two answers. One is that this is Lord Ram's Leela, so she did what she did. And another answer is because of her qualities, the modes of material nature, based on the guna and karma, she had those qualities, so she did that. How to comprehend two types of answers? It is challenging to stick to which answer.
Here's the third one. She was very protective of the person who she was serving. And she meant it. She wanted Kaikeyi to be, you know, protected, and you know, she saw danger. You know what's going to happen, and here's what's going to happen. Don't you, foolish woman. And, you know, she wanted to elevate the one who she was serving and to protect her from the position of servant. And she said, the way she said it was the modes of nature for sure. So it doesn't, so there's three answers, and one doesn't have to cancel the other one. She was a fit candidate to do what she did because of her position as the servant, because of the modes of nature, and because of the Lord in the heart, you know, prompted her to do what she did. It was a good fit. Similar to Kaikeyi. Kaikeyi, you know, was in this position of having, being the wife of Dasarath, and having Ram as her nephew, having said many, many, many times, I have more affection for Ram than for my own son. But she had, you know, she had that intimacy and affection for Ram. And she had some other qualities that are recited in Ramayana that were a perfect fit for doing what she did. But it wasn't her qualities, nor specifically even just the association of mantra. It was both. And it was super soul. And specifically, Govindaraj says, you know, that's the principal reason. Without the sanction of the Supreme Lord, nothing happens. So within her heart, Ram arranged. That's the Leela answer. And the others are not zero. It's not a 10, but it's not a 0. She was a fit person to be in Ram's Leela in the way that she was in Ram's Leela. Good match. She played her role very well. That's it?
No,
you have something?
Yes. This is my question, Guru Maharaj. I have never heard that explanation of killing Putana and
It took 2 weeks to get that answer, because nobody knew.
Yeah, this is the first time I'm hearing, so I have a question on that. So Rama and Krishna killed Tataka and Putana fast, so which is basically hankering for enjoyment is the asha. Is the, so why they are killing in our, or at least in my heart, it's slow. You know, it's not, it's happening, it's not ending. It seems like a long fight.
That's okay. It's not just you. Maybe for you it's faster, so maybe for you it's slower, for maybe you it's the same speed. So it's not, you know, why. The why is because we're attached. We're holding on. Although we know better. You know, the anchor while rowing the boat. That's why. We're holding on.
Guru Maharaj, one technical question. I have heard in many lectures, and recently the Ramayana lectures also, that, you know, the way Jatayu fought with Ravana, I kept hearing that Jatayu was much older.
I don't know the answer to that one. Who's older?
Right.
This question came up somewhere along the line, and, you know, Ravana is like super old. And how old is super old, and how old is Jatayu? I don't know the answer.
Yeah, the reason I asked that question is because Ravana killed the ancestor of Ikshvaku dynasty, Anaranya, a king.
Yes.
And he also curses Ravana.
Yes, not to go to Ayodhya.
Right.
So. I don't have the answer. Okay. And then there's too many Ramayanas to make my head spin.
Me too, Guru. Another question came
online. We're going to hear it tonight. We're going to hear some more tonight. The head spin, how many Ramayanas there are. Keep going.
One question based on the morning class. Yesterday's class, qualifications to become a Mahajan. Is there a qualification to how one becomes a Mahajan?
One doesn't become a Mahajan. There are 12 Mahajans and they are Mahajans. You know, become number 13. Throughout history, these are our 12. That's my understanding. You know, one may become, technical sense, a great soul, a great personality. Well, you know, Mahajana Yena Katasa Panta, that verse from Bhagavad Gita, means in generic sense, you know, whatever great souls do, the common people will follow. So one may become a great soul that common people follow. That's how you become that, is by proper following a great soul. You become qualified by following one who's qualified. Not imitating, but following one who's qualified. You become qualified. That's how you become qualified.
And the 12 Mahajans are told by Srimad Bhagavatam.
Yeah, Yamaraj gives them. Sixth canto.
Like the Brahma Rishi, the title was given by Brahma. Is there somebody who said these? Or
no, it's not like here's the yardstick and you get your certificate, now you're Brahma Rishi. Not like that. It's more that generic. And repeatedly during these, you know, he doesn't give him the Brahmarshi title, is he didn't have control of his senses. Keep going. More austerities, please. Now, there are other ways to control one's senses besides austerities, but that was the path that he was following, so that's what was recommended for him. You good? Yeah?
You have a question. Yeah, he has a question.
You have something?
Did Vishwamitra kill the 100 sons?
Did he have 100 sons?
Did he kill 100 sons?
He didn't. He didn't kill. Vishvamitra's sons were killed. Oh.
99.
You want, so your question is to Vishishta's sons or Vishvamitra's sons?
I think he was asking, yeah. Maharaj, when Vishishta's sons were not ready to go well, to Vishvamitra.
Well, he just cursed them, they become dog eaters. That's not nice. Yeah.
Krishna Maharaj. Krishna Maharaj, like Hanuman, Hanuman didn't went back to Vaikuntha Loka. He's still in this planet, like in this.
Kim Purusha Varsha.
So, what I heard was that because Ram actually embraced him, so he don't wanted to lose that body. I may be wrong. I don't know.
I don't even know what you're saying. He blessed him, so he became fully spiritualized by that blessing. But that doesn't mean, you know, his body became a spiritual body. He just became blessed of the mercy of Lord Ram.
Yes. So, why Hanuman didn't went to Vaikuntha Loka?
Because Ram gave him some service.
Okay.
And what was that service? Sing my glories till the end of the universe.
Okay, so this service was assigned by Ram to Hanuman.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm hearing different version and I'm getting confused, that's why.
Okay, that's, that happens.
That's,
okay. That happens.
One more online question.
Yeah.
And this question is from Sachi Mata, Mataji. Vishwamitra almost lost his piety every time he cursed someone or became angry.
He didn't lose his piety, he lost the merit of his austerities.
Okay. For conditioned souls like me, during the day, go through various modes of material nature, including lamentations, hankering, and other gross things like anger, etc. What happens to my consciousness during such times?
It gets covered.
Reset to the starting point.
It gets covered. That's what happens to your consciousness. It's quite simple. You know, it fluctuates. No, it fluctuates. Consciousness gets covered by guna and karma. And it changes. More covering, less covering. Different colors of covering, but covered consciousness.
So, what will be a good practical application during that time when I get some anger? Should I remember the lotus feet of the Lord?
Well, yeah, step back from the anger and ask yourself, where is this coming from? What is it that I'm feeling angry towards? What's that need in me that's not being met? And then detachment from the mind, because that's where the anger sits. That's not me. I'm observing the mind and the image in the mind and the feelings in the mind, but I'm the observer of it. So knowledge and detachment. You know, 10 deep breaths. Little pranayama, you know, like that slows the nervous system down and gives a little oxygen. There's practical things. It's not just, you know, some people say that without even knowing what they're doing, but that's what's going on in the physiological realm. And then the consciousness realm is, Krishna, this isn't pleasing to Krishna. So let me check it. And direct that energy into a higher consciousness place. It's easier to say it than to do it, but that's what things that one can do. Okay, now I have the concluding question for the two boys. Who goes first? Do you want to go first? Should I ask him to go first? Do you want to go first? Okay. You're the decider. Okay. Of all the things that you heard, what is going to stick with you, what's most significant and memorable and meaningful. And it can be the battle scene, that's fine. But whatever it is.
The fact that every time that Vitramitra tried to get austerities, he kept failing only because he didn't stick with the Lord. Because when you have the Lord takes care of everything.
Yeah.
But when he didn't stick with the Lord, he just kept going to the demigods. He only kept achieving one by one by one.
Yeah. He got triggered and went with the trigger and then whoop. He didn't have shelter, didn't have protection.
Yes.
Okay, good. Should I say the question again? Or okay. We spent 2 hours together. And out of all of what you heard, what was most meaningful to you and will stay with you? What resonates most with you? There's the microphone.
If you do whatever God says, then everything will be right.
Very good. Fantastic. I wish I knew that when I was 6 years old. Stick with it. Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Gaur Premanandi.
This is your personal system?
Yes.
Good.